The 2022 Sundance Film Festival wraps up this weekend. It is a chance for filmmakers to show their movies and maybe cut a deal to get it shown around the country. So let's talk now about some of the most exciting films coming out this year. With Ty Burr, former reporter at the Boston Globe, he now pens the Substack newsletter, Ty Burr's Watch List. Ty, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Scott.
And Aisha Harris, co-host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Aisha, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, Ty, let's start with a film that made news this week. Navalny is a film that profiles the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. It debuted at Sundance just hours after the Russian government put him on their list of terrorists and extremists. What is the case that this film makes for his side of the story here?
Oh, the movie makes an absolute open and shut case for Putin's government poisoning Alexei Navalny, because there's a remarkable scene where, because Navalny, who's incredibly charismatic, I wish we could have sound clips on in the section, but none of the Sundance films have media out there because they're all, you know, they haven't been released. They're trying to get distributors because he's so charismatic. There's a scene where he is working with a computer, you know, dark web specialist, and they get the identity and the phone numbers of the assassination team, and Navalny calls them in real time the camera, and three of them hang up. He's pretending to be like a mid-level administrator asking why the mission failed. And one of them basically tells all. And it's just astounding to hear what he says. And everybody on screen is kind of like holding their heads. They can't believe, you know, and whoever the guy isn't on the other end of the phone, he is almost certainly not alive anymore. That's just one of the things that makes this movie really remarkable. And Navalny is an incredible presence and very much involved in the making of the film.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, Aisha, I want to talk to you about a film that seeks to change people's minds in a way. It's Brainwashed, Sex, Camera, Power by Nina Menkes. Tell us about this.
So Nina Menkes, a few years ago, gave a couple of talks, and this movie is based off of those talks and incorporates these discussions around the ways in which filmmaking has primed us to look at women in a certain way. She really breaks down the different ways in which women have been objectified, the way in which misogyny is rampant within films, even our favorite films, and how we can appreciate some of those films, whether it's a movie by Hitchcock, Orson Welles, Spike Lee, but also find some issues with it. And so she really goes through using so many examples. There are over 100 different clips that she really digs into. This is the way the male gaze works. She also is interviewing a ton of really, really smart people about this. Laura Mulvey, who actually is famous for coining the term male gaze, is also featured in it and interviewed. So I really love this film. I think it will actually change people's mind, or at least make people see filmmaking in a different way, in the ways in which women, in the most subtle and sometimes very overt ways, are objectified and dehumanized.
Aisha, is there a scene that really makes the case that Nina's making?
Absolutely. So she's talking about not just sort of narratively the way these things work, but also shot by shot, like she's going frame by frame. And so she uses an example from Raging Bull, where you have the Robert De Niro character and the Joe Pesci character, and this is the pool scene, and it's one of the earliest scenes they have with the female character. And you see the female character, you never hear her speak, but you always hear the male character speaking while she's bathed in this like wash of light that makes her look ethereal and like this sort of object. And the fact that you don't hear her speak, Nina Menkes says, that can contribute to the ways in which in the real world we tune women out. And so there are moments like that that are just really, really persuasive.
Yeah. Boy, that jumps out the way you describe it. Now, both of you have the film After Young on your list of favorites. Ty, tell us about this.
This is a movie that in plot, pricey, sounds like it might not be much. It's about a family in the near future that is mourning its android, its family android. The director is a guy named Koganata, who made a wonderful film called Columbus. It stars Colin Farrell as the father of the family and Jodie Turner-Smith as the mother, and Justin H. Min as the android, Yang, who has been brought in as an older sibling to the couple's adopted Chinese daughter. So he's like an older brother, and he just stops working. And the film becomes a very pointed and insightful and emotional look into grief and memory and what makes us human. And I went into this movie not expecting much, and I was practically weeping at the end. It achieves a profoundness of emotion that many movies don't get to, and it does it with a very light touch. It's really quite unusual.
Grieving a digital being. Aisha, does it work for you?
Oh, it absolutely does. I've been waiting since Columbus for Coconata's follow-up, and I don't think it disappoints at all. I think that not only about grief and memory and loss, but it's also a very interesting study on sort of cross-cultural dynamics and the limitations of those dynamics. Because as Ty sort of alluded to, the reason they bring this droid in is so that they can they hope that their Chinese adopted daughter will be able to learn more about her culture because they can't provide that for her. And so it's really, really beautiful. And I, too, was like, by the end of it, just like kind of a wreck, emotional wreck.
Aisha, one more film on your list is Nanny, about an undocumented nanny from Senegal. And it has some supernatural elements.
I wouldn't say necessarily supernatural. So the filmmaker and the screenwriter is Nkiatu Jisu, and she is pulling from a lot of West African spiritual folklore. And so I'd say it's more a little bit more folklorish, and there's a lot of imagery of water. And what I love about this is it's a thriller in a ways that is sort of commenting on what it means to be a Black woman and a Black immigrant who has to deal with this privileged rich couple in New York City. But it's also about her trying to adapt to her surroundings while also trying to bring her young son from Senegal into the country. And so seeing her, it definitely has elements of horror movies where a woman becomes undone in many ways. And as she has to deal with the pressures of working for this couple while also hoping to bring her son to the country, she kind of we get into her psyche in ways that are just so fascinating. And I think the visuals are stunning. I think Jisu has a real handle on storytelling through visuals and in suspense. I was really on the edge of my seat throughout most of this film. And it was one of my favorites of the festival.
Yeah, I would agree with Aisha's mention of Nanny. And I was actually struck by some of the criticism that it doesn't meld the realistic story and the horror, when in fact, as she points out, it is folkloric. It's, you know, drawing on tales of Anansi and Mamiwata, and really incorporating them very, I think, organically into the story. The one other favorite that I had was, and I wasn't expecting it to be a favorite, it was Cha-Cha Real Smooth, which is, if you had a blueprint for a Sundance indie about a drifting young man after college who falls in love with a slightly older woman, this movie like fits the template so neatly. I was tempted to write it off. But the writer-director star is a guy named Cooper Rafe, and he is absolutely charming, and the movie is absolutely charming. And I hope it gets released, and I hope people get to see it.
Finally, Sundance this year, like last year, was entirely online. How does that change the experience for you and for the filmmakers and their aspirations? Ty?
One thing I think it does, and Tabitha Jackson, the Sundance director, has spoken about this, is that it takes Sundance out of the mountains and out of the sort of rarefied, privileged world of people who can pay to get there, and brings these movies to the rest of the world. And I think that's great. And I think that Sundance going forward will be hybrid. Even when we can go back to it, there will be online screenings. And I think that is absolutely all to the best. It benefits filmmakers as well, because they're seeing their work get out there in a way that benefits their careers and helps build word of mouth outside the hothouse of Sundance. And I think that will help with distribution deals as well.
Yeah, I concur with all of that, although I do. And another sort of aspect of it from a critic's perspective is that I'm able to see so many more films in this way. Usually when I'm in attendance at Sundance, I might see maybe 8 to 10 movies. That's all I have time for, because you're going back and forth from you have to go from each theater to theater. And then you're also doing a ton of interviews in person. And so it's hard to move around there. And this year I was able to see, the festival's not over yet, but so far I've been able to see 23 movies, which is a lot. But
I'm one behind you. I've done 22, so you know.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that's a great thing. But I do also hope that next year and in the years coming up, we can go back to being in person, because there is something special about just being able to see these things in a theater undistracted. As much as I love being able to watch these with my dogs, it's I would love to be able to be in the theater too.
That's a really good point, because there is nothing quite like the experience of being in a theater in Park City when a movie connects with an audience, a big audience, and the screen goes black and you can just feel the audience swell up in a reaction that you just can't, obviously you can't get at home. And it's a feeling of discovery. I've had it happen a couple of times with Beast of the Southern Wild, for instance, Whiplash with another, where just the audience was welded into one experience of just being bowled over by this vision that this director was having that I've missed for 2 years, and I would look forward to getting it back.
We've been talking to NPR's Aisha Harris and film critic Ty Burr about Sundance and what's coming this year. Thanks to you both.
Thank you,
Scott.
And we will have their entire lists at hereandnow.org.